Good morning and welcome to the second day of J.P. Morgan's Energy, Power, Renewables, and Mining Conference. My name is Bill Peterson, U.S. Clean Tech and Mining Analyst, and I'm really pleased to have the team from NexGen Energy here. We have Lee Curyer, who's going to give us a brief presentation. I have a lot of questions, but I'm happy to take questions from the audience. So thanks for supporting the conference 2 years in a row. Happy to have you here again, Lee.
Thank you. Yeah, so I'll just start with a quick summary for those new to the story with respect to what NexGen is. NexGen is developing the world-class Rook I project, which is capable of being the largest supplier of uranium to the world's growing nuclear demand, approximately 20%. Once in production, the project will be capable of producing around 20% of the world's uranium supply coming from Canada, which is consistently ranked as the world's best jurisdiction for a uranium development and operating mine. We have a very long-life asset. We have delineated resources of 350 million pounds, capable of producing 30 million pounds per year. But we are initially licensing for a 24-year mine life, which gives everyone a very good perspective with respect to how we feel the resource growth at the project is unfolding. Located in Saskatchewan, Canada, as I said, it's consistently ranked in the top jurisdictions worldwide for developing a uranium mine and operating. We have 100% formal Indigenous community support through impact benefit agreements that we have with each of those four communities. They are widely recognized in Canada as the most transparent, genuine, and generationally accretive impact benefit agreements that exist. And we are fully leveraged to future uranium prices. We'll discuss it today. The outlook for higher uranium prices is incredibly bullish. And we have a full project execution team in place with the site in incredible shape. I was up there just last week, all ready for construction once the final federal approval process is complete. Just to showcase a bit of the tier one economics of this project, like in uranium, it's considered the most economically powerful project that exists. It's most likely one of the best projects economically in mining, full stop. Given its rapid payback period of just around 1 year, 12 months, based on the current uranium price. Free cash flow, which would take the company into the top 10 of all world mining companies with respect to after-tax free cash flow. And as I said previously, we're permitting for a 24-year license. The feasibility study of the project is just on the measured and indicated resources. We have a considerable resource in the inferred category, which would extend that mine life beyond the 11.7 years. And we have mineralization in and around Arrow, which is yet to be delineated and brought onto the resource statement. But it's anyone who reviews the project is very, very clear on the resource growth that exists at Rook I and on our greater exploration portfolio. One of the unique factors of the Arrow deposit is that it's entirely contained in the basement rock, which presents the ideal conditions for extraction. The other aspect with respect to being hosted in the basement rock is that we have an exceptionally clean metallurgy, as the water with respect to the deposit is barely exists, which presents ideal extraction and then metallurgical processing of the ore body. Those who can see the slide will see that it's a vertically dispositioned mineralization, which is ideal for very efficient extraction. We are moving very little rock other than the ore body with respect to the extraction. and the deposit still remains open in every direction. That area in green is what we're talking about with respect to the feasibility study. The outline is the larger inferred resource, and we also have mineralization defined below Arrow at 1,200 meters below surface beyond that grade shell. But those familiar with the CN Tower in Toronto next to the Blue Jays Stadium, it's an incredibly tall building. That puts the vertical extent into perspective that it's about 1 2/3 the height of the CN Tower and still growing. Those who have been following our news releases over the last month or so would have seen that PCE, which is a new prospect that we've been drilling 3.5 kilometers due east of Arrow, we have hit an intercept which is better than anything we ever discovered at Arrow during the exploration phase. And if you put these two deposits side by side and compare what the deposits look like at the same time the meters drilled, well, the PCE deposit is over a broader mineralized extent, and it's exhibiting multiple high-grade intercepts within the overall mineralized footprint. And incredibly exciting. We feel that when we discovered Arrow with the 21st drill hole on the property back on Valentine's Day 2014, it's very unlikely we've hit the best project on that property, yet it is the best project in the world currently. And hence, it just speaks to the prospectivity of the Rook I project in the sense that PCE could be even better. And we've certainly got four drill rigs out there at the moment doing round-the-clock exploration in terms of defining that prospect as well. So to have the world's best project under development and in the final stages of federal permitting, and then at the same time in parallel, possibly being on a deposit which is already clearly economic. It will also be a mine subject to approval. Is just an incredible position for the company to be in as the market fundamentals are certainly aligning for our project.
Great. Yeah, no, thanks for the introduction. Well, I think we can get to some of the project-related things, and just as a reminder, if there's any questions from the audience, we can certainly take those as well. I want to maybe start off with policy support, and I think maybe framing it from the U.S. perspective, but maybe more also broadly a Western perspective. How do you view the U.S. and Western policy support for nuclear and really the full sort of nuclear fuel cycle and value chain?
Yeah, look, it's unprecedented. I've been in the industry since 2002. I've never seen such broad support for nuclear energy worldwide. The U.S. are on a program to quadruple nuclear energy or the consumption of nuclear energy by 2050. That means by 2040, they're going to have increased their current consumption by 2.5 times. They currently produce or consume 50 million pounds of uranium a year, yet produce less than one domestically. So when you just look at that from a demand and supply perspective, the prospect of far higher prices in the uranium space is clearly obvious to everyone. But it's just not in the U.S. China reported just last week that they would triple their generation of nuclear energy by 2040. They will become the world's largest producer of nuclear energy during the 2030th decade. Europe, you've seen France commit and finance 14 new commercial-sized nuclear reactors. They already have 80% of their energy generation through nuclear energy. You're seeing Denmark, Spain, Italy, just about the whole of Europe recommit to nuclear energy. And what's very, very pleasing is that it is based on sound scientific analysis that It is the most reliable, safest, and cost-effective form of energy generation, which contributes zero carbon consequence. And for someone who's been in the industry for over two decades, it's just really pleasing to see that the debate or the policy of nuclear energy is now reflecting the scientific fundamentals as opposed to some of the false rhetoric that had been generated in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah. Maybe just picking up on that last point, though, and again, from a U.S. lens, we've seen positive executive orders, but things can change in administration or a new administration. So I guess what more durable policy changes or something that could be codified can further benefit the industry, let's say, really into the next decade and beyond?
Yeah, well, we've seen the US government provide financing for the reopening of nuclear reactors in Illinois. The World Bank just last week turned over its ban on financing nuclear energy. You're seeing green bonds being issued in Canada for the development of nuclear energy. This is happening quickly. I would say, though, it's been in two decades in the making, though, and we're now at the very start of it being triggered. And from my perspective, it's happening faster than I ever anticipated. So incredibly exciting for the sector. It's the right thing to do for the planet and populations, because the price of energy and the reliability of energy is the core fundamental of any successful economy and standard of living.
Yeah. Coming back to supply and demand, and there's a lot of hype, obviously, the hyperscalers, the AI-driven theme. We've seen some announcements investing in nuclear, some large deals recently, as well as bringing back reactors, as you pointed out. So that were previously shut down, or maybe others that are planned to be shut down may get some extensions. So I guess how should we think about uranium demand growth and uncovered requirements over the next sort of 5 to 10 years, maybe both from sort of a Western perspective, but then also including China?
Yeah, look, I can tell you any reactor that is scheduled to be closing down, I don't think you're going to see it. They're going to be extended. And the US government have been very, very clear on that aspect of extending the reactor life of nuclear reactors right around the US. So it's incredibly exciting. And look, AI is also driving it. We're seeing Amazon, Microsoft, all of the large data center users commit to nuclear energy, and not only commit to nuclear energy, but put in agreements where they're going to pay far higher prices than they currently are in order to secure that nuclear energy. Personally, I don't think you could get a better market signal with respect to the fundamentals of nuclear energy when you're seeing those types of agreements being put in place with these major data center users. That is on top of what is already a 60 million pound gap between demand and supply. And then when you look at the US, Europe, Asia, all committing to nuclear energy in terms of, we're not just talking about 10% increases or 20%, we're talking 300%, 400%. Increases in nuclear generation. And so the key element is the fuel, uranium, which will need to meet that demand. And currently, when you look at world supply, the outlook for world supply over the next 5 years, in the 2030th decade, it's under considerable stress. Not just from a technical perspective and cost perspective, we're seeing costs going up amongst all the current producers, and in most cases above where the current uranium price is. And then when you consider that 45% of the US's fuel needs have been serviced by Russia, it's an unprecedented opportunity for projects that are located in Canada, Australia, or the US to service this already very wide demand and supply gap and only getting wider. And with NextGen's Rook I project, which will be around 20% of the world's total supply, on the doorstep of the world's largest market in the US, it's with good reason we're incredibly excited about the role that Rook I is going to play in that.
We're going to get to Rook I in a moment, but just to stick on the supply-demand theme for a moment, picking up on that last point. So when Rook I, when this is running, I guess, at capacity, you know, sometime, you know, maybe next decade, what does that do to the supply-demand balance? Or maybe Rook I plus any other capacity that you're aware of. I'm just wondering, does that 60 million pound gap grow, or does it stay stable, or does it shrink? How should we think about the deficit?
Well, looking at the production forecast of the current suppliers, NextGen's 30 million pounds will not even replace what is coming offline between now and 2030. So that gap is widening. With the introduction of Rook I, I don't think it's going to provide or make much of a dent in that demand and supply gap. I think it's reasonable for us to forecast that we'll be under pressure to even produce more than 30 million pounds, which is a very important role for our project to play. And we have the ability, obviously subject to permitting approval, around that 30 million pounds per annum, and if the market demands it, we will be in a position to service it subject to approval.
Maybe, I guess, speaking more kind of on the commercial side, given these deficits that are likely, that are already there and maybe even getting larger, what are you seeing in terms of customer conversations today, even though we're still 4 years out from production?
So we are very, very active on that front, particularly with US and European utilities. I would also say Asian utilities as well. I was at the World Nuclear Fuel Forum in Sydney 3 weeks ago, and what was extremely noticeable compared to the same meeting 6 months earlier was just the number of utilities attending, which was kind of strange given that it was in Sydney where there is no nuclear generation capacity. And then the proactive nature of particularly the Asian utilities openly saying on a panel with US utilities that they're prepared to pay more than the US utilities. It obviously caused a bit of a stir, but what I see there is that the Asian utilities have got incredibly strong nuclear ambitions. They do execute. They build these reactors on time and budget. And it did have a consequence with US utilities in respect to our negotiations. We signed our first round of offtake agreements in the fourth quarter of 2024. Further offtake agreements in the final stages of negotiation with US, European and Asian utilities. And, it's an incredibly busy time for us. And we've had many visits up to site from the utilities. And I think you're going to see that activity increase as we go forward and this demand and supply gap really starts to bite.
One of the things that's interesting about the story is your approach to contracting, focusing more on spot and maybe benefiting from upside, obviously, if uranium prices move higher. Can you walk us through the mechanics of the strategy, what gives you confidence in the, well, I suppose because the supply-demand gap gives you confidence, but why is that the right strategy versus, you know, maybe hedging?
Well, any contracting strategy revolves around the technical and economic aspects of the mine. We have a highly reliable production profile because we're in incredibly competent rock and with an exceptionally clean metallurgy. And the cost per pound is around $10 US. So when you look at those two aspects and the current price is, or the spot price is $76 a pound, it's risen 10% in the last 2 weeks. we have the ability to remain exposed to future prices. When you also then consider that the average marginal cost of production worldwide at the moment from the major producers in real terms is at or near the mid-60s US, it's very, very straightforward. We are going to keep exposed to higher uranium prices, and we don't see any material production coming online other than our own and I'd say three others. And as I mentioned earlier, all of those collectively aren't even going to replace what is coming offline before 2030. So it's very straightforward, purely reflecting the technical and economic merits of our project, where the cost structure is of the current producers, and we're keeping exposed to however high that price can go up. We have a responsibility to do that. The other aspect too is we have a very low capex relative to the economic performance of the mine and a very quick payback period, so we don't need to lock in fixed production at fixed prices to finance the capex of the project. So is it different to what has occurred previously? Absolutely it is. But this project, there's never been a project like this on the planet ever with respect to such strong technical characteristics and incredibly low economic costs. So the industry or the nature of contracting is changing. We have shortened the duration of offtake agreements. We've removed volume flexibility at the discretion of the utilities. And we have far higher prices on average than other current producers' contract books suggest. So given the offtake contracts that we're concluding, we're seeing absolute buy-in to our strategy with respect to offtake and where it's heading. And when you consider the cost of the fuel is such a small component of the overall cost to a nuclear utility, it makes total sense to keep exposed to future higher prices.
Yeah, let's dive further into Rook I. So in November, the CNSC provided NextGen with a confirmation around the completion of the technical review stage for the Rook I project, and the hearing dates are set for November 2025 as well as February 2026. I guess, can you walk us through the significance of now having the hearing dates?
Of now having the hearing dates, yes, it's great. We've got two bookends to conclude the federal permitting process. We have the federal permitting process is the very last step in their overall journey. We have provincially approved the province of Saskatchewan. We have full support from all the Indigenous communities. We have sign-off by the CNSC with respect to our federal EIS, which is identical to the provincial EIS, which is approved. And those hearing dates are the final stage. We're well prepared. The communities are well prepared. The province is well prepared. And on the conclusion of that process, we'll be practically immediately into construction of the Rook I underground and surface development.
Yeah. How much detailed engineering work has been done at this point? And maybe on the lines of CapEx, you know, how much confidence do you have in your 2.2 billion Canadian expectations, you know, given, I guess, the broader inflationary environment, and frankly, over the last 5 years, we've seen everything come, you know, higher above budget.
Yeah, so the 2.2 billion figure was based on engineering of around 56%. So we have a very high confidence around it. You know, one of the benefits of a very, very long permitting process is it gives you plenty of time to plan, revise, and do the detailed engineering. We have an incredibly simple mine. No project has had more detailed engineering and testing than this project. In my experience, and I've looked at projects right around the world, not just in uranium, but also gold, copper, and other minerals. But this is has been delineated so thoroughly, not just from a drilling perspective, but geotechnical, environmental, engineering-wise. We're in at engineering at 56%, which is an incredibly good level of confidence, and it's recent, $2.2 billion as of August of 2024. There's no doubt costs do increase. We've experienced that everywhere across the industry, right across the world. The benefit of having such powerful economics and such a low operating cost, though, is that any increase in costs, this project will just eat it. So I would really like to emphasize, though, we are extremely confident around our cost estimate off that engineering, and then taking into account the technical simplicity, it also provides a very high level of confidence. And then it comes down to us as a group executing it. And everything we've done with respect to the development of this project has been industry elite. And we love having everything in our control. And once that federal permit is in our grasp, we can't wait to have the full responsibility in constructing this project. And we have handpicked the team from across the globe with a combination of hard rock mining and also uranium processing experience.
Yeah. And I guess how quickly after receiving the final federal approval could you ramp construction? And I guess maybe along those lines, can you walk us through the funding options and sources you have that can support the construction?
Yeah, in practice, it's literally the following month we will start construction of the project. As I said, the benefit of a long permitting process, it allows you to plan and put the measures in place. And we have, we've put deposits down on long lead time items going back as far as 18 months ago. So the execution plan is well in hand and constantly reviewed on a daily basis. With respect to the financing, we've been running a debt process on the project, given the payback period is 12 months at current uranium prices. It means that we can literally maximize debt. And when you maximize debt, you're really looking at around 65% of the total cost. We've also been running a direct project equity process as well to compare the two. And then also with utilities, we are negotiating possible prepayment of future production, which would be a fantastic form of financing as well. And I think the takeaway for that is if utilities are looking at prepayment for future production, it really does tell you that they are now seeing how this market is unfolding and wanting to secure uranium from very technically sound and sovereign-sound locations. And NexGen ticks both of those boxes incredibly well.
I want to break and see if there's any questions from the audience before continuing. Okay. You talked earlier about the PC, the Patterson Quarter East. You've seen some promising drill results. Can you speak to the geologic characteristics or, I guess, provide a little more detail there and what other further exploration work you're doing?
Yeah. Look, PCE is exhibiting all the same characteristics of Arrow. Any geologist will see that there's been a significant mineralizing event in that area. We have 190,000 hectares straddling the edge of the basin. So in practice, we are most likely in the shallowest part of the basin and likely to find the most economic mineralization. And we found Arrow with the 21st drill hole on the property. Now, our geology team did a fantastic job, and they've done it again with PCE. But I don't believe we're that good that we've found the two best deposits that exist on that project first up. So I think the prospectivity in and around Arrow is very clear. As per that slide, it's open in every direction and is growing. We've got PCE, which at the same stage of drilling looks better than Arrow. Now, they've all got their own profile and develop in their own time. At a minimum, PCE is going to be an economic ore body that will supplement Arrow. And being 3.5 kilometers away, entirely in the basement rock, we would access it underground. And so it's almost going to be coming for free at the appropriate time in the production profile, obviously subject to a separate permitting process. So, look, the area is incredibly well mineralised, and you know, PCE is number two of, I'm sure, many other deposits to be discovered on our property. It's already been referred to as the Saudi Arabia of uranium. Arrow itself will produce 20% of the world's uranium supply. Saudi Arabia produced 9% of the world's oil supply. So when you put that into perspective, and nuclear energy now becoming at the forefront of the world's energy focus, NextGen's going to be playing an incredibly significant role in the delivery of safe, reliable, cost-efficient power.
Well, Lee, thanks for sharing your insights. Unfortunately, we are out of time, but thanks again for supporting the conference, and look forward to following the progress.
Thank you, JP Morgan.